Have you ever thought, I would like to dive a little deeper into my education, health, and wellness? How about your personal development or parenting? It's time to press pause as we have candid, authentic, and honest mindful conversations. Here's your host, Amber Pavey.
Thank you for joining me. Take two for us, right?
Yeah.
So today, Dr. Jody has joined me. We are both Albertans, actually, so local gals. We're here today to talk a little bit about parenting, our current world, navigating it, and what our path forward is. So Jody graciously accepted my invitation to join me on this podcast today in my Mindful Conversations, Press Pause with Amber Pavey. So I'm so thrilled that you're here. So I thought we'd just dive right in. Dr. Jody, for my listeners or that maybe don't know you, I'll give you a quick intro and then please, you know, if there's anything that I've missed, please jump in and add to it. So you are a mom of three. You're a child psychologist and you're the author of Kids These Days and the co-author of your new book called Teachers These Days. And I actually have a question for you. Is there going to be a Teens These Days? Because I have a teenage daughter and I was just thinking this morning, I could really use a Teens These Days book.
Oh, it's so interesting. It's like we've created this roadmap because people ask us all the time, where do I find husbands these days? Where do I find teens these days? What about like assholes these days? What do we do with those? And I was like, you know what? So much of it lands in kids these days because the book isn't even about kids.
Yeah.
It's about the big people. And I know, you know, just before we went live, we were talking about this even on your platform, you know, the importance of speaking to the big people, whether it's a teacher or a parent or, you know, we really want the best for our kids. And the issue is if we're not okay, they don't stand a chance. And the first book was really, you know, kids these days is such a statement that we make all the time. And I hear it all the time, you know, the kids these days are lazy or they're disrespectful or they don't know how to work or they, you know, all those kind of things, which is truthfully the same things our parents said about us and our grandparents said about our parents. And, you know, every generation changes so significantly, which is P.S. the point. But it's something that is different and not our script. And so we think that the way kids show up in this world are not the way we did, so therefore not the way they should. And it's interesting because when you unpack it all, we all as humans want the same thing, to know we matter, to know that we're important, and to have role models to show us how to do it. Because you can't embody any of those feelings or those beliefs unless somebody shows you how to do that, not tell you, right? And just the ludicrousy of saying this, like, be kind, or calm down, you know, or don't be an anti-racist becomes, you know, unpalatable unless you understand when I say, this is how we do it. We're going to start today with a land acknowledgement, or we're going to, you know, do this piece in a way that like, no, this is what mom's going to do today. We're going to go buy coffee for the people behind us. You know, you can't tell people how to do it. You got to show them. And so we can encourage our kids to be fantastic in this next generation. But we now more than ever are responsible for that because we've never been more disconnected. Kids had so much more time, even two generations ago, watching because they were in smaller houses. Now it is shifting so significantly and it must become more deliberate to show them because we have less and less and less and less and less face-to-face time. In fact, I was reading some research by Bruce Perry the other day that said over the last 5,000 years, which I understand is a pretty big time, but when we look over, you know, even the last three generations, the face-to-face time that we've spent with our kids have decreased by 75%, which means in that process, what we've missed is the showing. Right? Which we just taken for granted, quite honestly, and which meant behaviorism worked much more effectively because we were much more connected. Now we're disconnected. So what does that mean? We have to shift into a much more genuine way, or sorry, not genuine, deliberate way of showing, not telling.
And that is that intention, that intentional piece, right? In the work that I do, the meaning is the same, but it's just the language is a little different. It's what is your intention, right? What do you really want to create for your family, for your life, in your work? What is your intention behind it?
And doing things on purpose, right? For me, it's the same thing as is sort of an intention. Do it like you mean it and not like it's sort of in this place of like, okay, this is my job as a parent or, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do in this, you know, like I'm supposed to be a kind human. I'm supposed to show up for school 8:25 every morning. Do it on purpose. With intention, with clarity, with I'm going to sit and play cards with my kid. It doesn't have to be an elaborate trip to Disneyland where you're doing 25,000 things right and you're saving every piece of. I was reading, oh my God. Okay. So Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart came out yesterday. And this is her latest book, and she's my hero. And it was so interesting because just even in the prologue, she's talking about, you know, I watched other moms like save every piece of art that, you know, their kids ever did. And she's like, holy shit, like, I better get on this. This particular mom that she writes about then placed it at this child's wedding at the rehearsal dinner, that all their art was like strung up on the around. She was like, oh God, I'm so far behind. Like, I need to save all the art. And then she was like, this is ridiculous. Like, come on. And so I think it's like so much about this idea of, you don't have to do those great things. It's really about, how do you on purpose sit and have a conversation with your kid today, 30 seconds? How do you on purpose say, okay, I'm exhausted, I'd much rather watch Netflix, but everybody's going to sit down. We'll probably want to throw punch each other, but we're all going to play war or queens or like whatever happens in your family before we go to bed today. And it's interesting to me what happens around that, because it's so much easier just to allow the distractions to occur. I am your girl when we talk about this. Just give me iPads. Like, I'm so fucking tired. I'm not interested. Everybody's calmer. Everybody is getting along more when we are zoned out in our own respective bubbles. And the cost to that is fantastic. The cost to that is the mental health pandemic we're in the middle of right now.
Yeah. And I've heard you reference, and correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm paraphrasing, that we are really in the midst of a crisis, a mental health crisis. And if something doesn't give at some point, the impacts will be catastrophic. Is that correct? Did I?
100%. Yeah. And I think we're always on the cusp of that. And I think there's always goodness in humanity. And I think how we get back to that every single day is actually not up to anybody but you and me. And so when you create platforms like this and I create platforms like this, it's like, my only hope is that one or two or three, or like, my goodness, can you imagine 20 people listen to this today and went, okay, I'm going to do the next best right kind thing. I'm going to sit with my kid, or I'm going to do something. That's it. That's the only way we do this. This is the power of social media. This is the power of connecting to each other to remind us that in our own spaces is where we are the most powerful.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And easy, we have this propensity to want to push the easy button, right? Like, pick the iPad or the zone out or whatever. Sure, go play Xbox for 10 hours, right? But what is the cost of that easy button? And I always say the right thing is often the hard thing. Like, it's usually the thing that creates some discomfort, maybe some conflict, right? Whether it's in conversation or an activity or whatever it is. And, you know, it really speaks to our times that it is easier in many ways for everybody to be off in their own corner of the house and zoned off on a device. And the one awareness that I've had recently with my own family, with my own children, is, you know, I'll be on my laptop in the morning, right? Checking email real quick before, just to make sure that no, like, no fires have started. And I look up and the three of them are sitting on their devices. And I'm like, guys, what are you doing? No devices in the morning before school. Come on. And then I go, oh, whoa, mama, what are you doing? You're on a device. You are literally modeling it. And so then I close my computer, but I have to check myself. And there's that piece of like acceptance and acknowledgement of, mama, are you in alignment with your words and actions, right? For me, that's always, I always come back to that, is, are my words and actions in alignment? And if they're not, my kids, they may not call me on it, but they'll show me with their behavior or their level of disconnection. And so then it's my job to go, oh, this needs to be shifted, right? Without me attacking them or coming down hard on them. It's like, no, I've actually allowed that. I've created that space to happen. So now it's time to reel things back in and acknowledge, whoa, okay, without shaming myself or blaming myself, or without that inner saboteur or inner self-critic who wants to just, you know, like, wave my finger at myself, where I can say, okay, well, we got off base, let's self-correct now, right? From a kind place, rather than from a place of, oh, geez, Amber, you let it happen again, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, that grace part is tricky, hey?
Yeah,
that grace part is tricky. And I think that it is often a place where we never arrive at. Mm-hmm. And there are moments where we do really great things and we're like sort of on it. And, you know, we sort of, I think, are good at it with ourselves. But like, listen, it's not an end game. And I think that's the thing that I can't believe I didn't know this. But I'm astounded all the time. It's like, no, we haven't arrived there. And so I think that's just, you know, how do we do this, you know, becomes part of the issue right now, especially as we are so disconnected and hard on ourselves, like when we're hard on everybody else and we're hard on ourselves. And that's just where, like, don't you find like, that's just so where everybody I come across seems to be these days. What about you?
I agree 100%. And I often say, you know, like, we show people what we believe is true about ourselves, right? The way we treat others, like, we can't give what we don't have. So yeah. If we aren't showing ourselves kindness and compassion, we can't really share kindness and compassion with others, right? If we're constantly berating ourselves, right, with that inner critic and that self-saboteur, then we'll do the same to others. We're just, as Brené Brown would say, we're passing the pain, right? We're passing the pain unconsciously. And it's, I hear often people say, well, this was how I was raised, or you were raised better than that. Or, well, this was how my parents did it, and so this is how I do it. And I think there's a bit of inflexibility there, or there's some level of like commitment to these ancestral or generational traditions that might be unhealthy perhaps. And so we have to be able to step back and say, okay, is this really serving me? Is this really serving my family? Yes or no? And if it's a no, what's the healthiest, kindest, best foot forward where I can acknowledge and honor what did happen or what didn't happen perhaps, and then say, okay, this is what I want to change for my family moving forward. But we feel like we're betraying our ancestors or our generational, you know, family members that came before us, that if we don't do it the way they did it, that somehow, you know, we're going to break the family in some capacity, right? The black sheep is always the one that breaks those generational curses. And so I sense that there's a bit of inflexibility or a fear that we just keep doing what we know because it feels safe. Like, it just feels safe. And then breaking out of that is terrifying for so many folks.
And I think, you know, in line with that, and you'll know about this better, but there, I'm just so struck these last little bit about sort of carrying the burdens, the weight, the hope of our ancestors on our shoulders. And I was looking at this other day, a quote by Maya Angelou, because I have it in my new book that I'm trying to desperately write right now, where she just talked about she never went on stage and felt alone, because she always had her ancestors with her. And it is that just sort of like took my breath away, because I was like, you know, in this age of disconnect, how do we, if we're going to be motivated to be able to sort of have grace on ourselves or to do well by ourselves, like we've lived through all of us in these respective generations, in the wombs of our mothers and our grandmothers and our, you know, like this is not our first, and our fathers and our grandfathers, right? Like, so we've been here for multiple generations, and the human brain has changed, you know, is the same, but what we know, the knowledge that we have that has been passed on, that has shown us how to do things, is so remarkably different. And I think about that even in the realm of, you know, racism. I mean, you and I were both raised in this province. I think about just how many racist ideals I was raised with, mm-hmm. and how different the conversation is, you know, specifically around racism or gender identity, how different it is, you know, with my children and the conversations that we have in one generation. And this is not to say that my mom or dad are bad people. I mean, they're not. They did what they knew to be true in that moment. But even speaking about, you know, if I think about the conversations around slavery four generations ago to now is ludicrous. We have the exact same brains, but given what we understand to be true. And, it, you know, we were playing the game of life with our 8-year-old twins the other day. And it was so fascinating to me because Evan said to dad, like to his dad, do you want to be a boy or like, do you want to be married? Are you gay today? Do you want to be married to a boy or a girl today? And without even flinching, Aaron was like, oh, I'm going to be married to a boy today. Sort of normalizing this idea in some ways that like that's a question we can ask people. Whereas that wouldn't have floated at my kitchen table.
Oh yeah.
And so I think just this idea that we carry our ancestors with us and giving us grace that, you know, we're going to fuck it up in this season, just as they did in some ways. And all we can do is the best we got with what we have in this moment. And we hope that our kids are going to do better than us. That's the joy. That's the hope.
Yeah. And that concept of when you know better, you do better, right?
Yeah, and you can't unless we show them. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And then we can move forward, you know, with some intentional, meaningful purpose rather than just simply, you know, having that wheel spin because it spins, right? There's some consciousness behind it rather than just repetitive, unconscious parenting or familial traditions and routines that can happen in our world. Yeah. It's definitely a challenging time. So what would you say to families? I know I've been coaching a number of families who have adolescents who are really, really struggling. I call COVID the great illuminator. And so, you know, if there were cracks, those cracks have become crevices. Some of our youth are just literally hanging by a thread, hanging by their fingernails, it feels like some days. And these poor parents are holding their breath going, oh, are we going to make it out of this? Right? Like I can feel and sense the fear and the desperation and the something's got to give, right? Something has to give kind of energy behind it. So what do you say to parents who see their children's behavior as misbehavior perhaps, or they're misunderstood and they want to fix, right? They really want to fix their child. They want to be done with this and, you know, move on. They want to be healthy. What's your advice for those families that are really in crisis with their youth at this time?
First of all, I would say to any mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or cook'em or auntie or mush'em that's trying to do their very best right now, like deep breath, because you are amazing. Mm-hmm. And your babies are so lucky to have you. Mm-hmm. And the data for which you need to gather to suggest that is true will not be from them, mm-hmm. because their job, in a colloquial term, is to be an asshole. The only way you learn how to calm is you have to go through the chaos. So their job is to push boundaries and test limits and have a big meltdown over the fact that you said you were going to be there tomorrow night and now you're not, and you're a liar. That's their job. Now, is that acceptable behavior? Do you condone it? Do you support it? Do you believe it? No. There's two big differences. And I think that in light of that, we need to surround ourselves with people who can continually remind us of that, because we often put such a high emphasis on our, you know, our judgments of ourselves on our ability to keep our kids emotionally regulated. When are they making good choices? When are they using their manners? When are they not fighting with each other? When are they not doing those things? Their job as we raise these tiny humans is to walk them through those hard things, not protect them from them, not avoid them, not try to have the kid that never has the meltdown. No, ma'am. I want the kids that can do it. And that the thing I'm asking for in those moments, which, you know, happen, you know, obviously hourly, is the grace to remember that my job is to walk them through it and to do it somehow half-assed at least 30% of the time. That's it. That's the only ask. Like I will mess it up. I'm exhausted. I'm overwhelmed. I'm going to, you know, lose my mind. And even in the moment, sometimes when I say things, I'm like, that seriously, like I wrote a book about it, as you know, and I have no fucking idea what I'm doing 90% of the time. So much about this is grace in those moments. And when we are regulated and relaxed, we are phenomenal parents. The way I judge our ability to parent is, how do we show up with other people's children? Because typically we are the most connected. So if my babies come over to your house tomorrow and they're having the shittiest day and Olivia is saying things like she said to me, you know, or her grandmother this week, like, get out of my room. If your baby was doing that and said, get out of my room, I'd be concerned. I'd be like, something's up. Okay. I'm out, sweetheart. I'm going to leave some water. I'm at your door. Here's a cup of water. Okay. Let's figure out what's going on. Get out. I hate you. You're dumb. Oh, I've heard that before, sweetheart, but I'm not going anywhere. Right. So with your kid, I have all the grace in the world. Now, will there be a time where I might take charge and be like, not cool, dude. Yes. Yeah. But my line of crossability is so much more in the sand with babies that I'm not invested in. Huh? So that's really where we judge each other by, is how, you know, how is our ability to stay regulated when we have less skin in the game? That really shows us the skills that we have, because that's when we have the most access to them. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
I agree 100%. And for me personally, that practice of creating that space, like being able to create a bigger bandwidth to deal with all the crap coming at you in life, because it does, that's the human experience, is my practice of mindfulness, cultivating that practice of mindfulness and meditation and being able to create calm and a regulated nervous system on my yoga mat or on my meditation cushion, I can then take that energy with me into my day. And some days it goes really well. And some days it's a hot freaking mess, you know. Right. And on the days it's a hot freaking mess, after I've, you know, unloaded on one of my kids or something, and I've gone, oh, that was not good. That didn't go the way I thought. I have the grace to be able to say to myself, whoa, Amber, you need to repair this. You had a reaction. And so where there is reaction, there is repair required at always. Like, that's the one thing I've learned, is that when there's reaction, there's repair required. So then I go in and I say, you know, mom didn't deal with that very well, right? I really apologize. And sometimes my kids catch me off guard and they're really funny. I'm like, yeah, mom, you always yell at us. Stop yelling. And they kind of like make a joke of it, right? Because they know mom's being really hard on herself and she probably doesn't need to be, right? Like, it wasn't a big deal to them, but I've made it a big deal, and it's really not. And I also sometimes will say, you know, I just don't have the bandwidth for this today. You know, I might not be able to respond or hold space for you the way you deserve. Can we shelve it or table it and maybe talk about it later or tomorrow? Giving ourselves permission to be human, right? Because it, for these families who are in crisis, and I'm talking deep, deep crisis, like some life or death situations here, I know from my own experience that when we're in the mess of it, there's magic there that can be cultivated and mined. There's gold in that mess. If we can take a breath, pause, and start to go deep within and go, okay, where's the gold in all of this? But we're often so busy flailing that we can't take the time to find the gold, right? It's there. And so what is that mess? What magic is in that mess to be found?
Yes.
Because in my experience, there's always a message, and there's always magic. That takes a bit of a shift in our perception and our mindset to see the mess that way.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay. I think that's brilliant. And I think so much about this is, you know, what do you think is like, how do we do that? How do we stay connected in a way that, you know, what do we do to sort of make sure that we have those places to land? Not if, but when shit goes south.
I love that. Not if, but when. It's so true. And I think you're right. It starts with us. We have to cultivate it for ourselves first. So we have to create a safe space for ourselves and for our own emotions to cry, to be angry, to allow everything and feel it all and be with it all and not resist or avoid or judge or shame or blame ourselves for having those experiences, but really learn to hold ourselves with compassion and love and grace and kindness and all of that. And then that ripples out. I see it as like a teacup, you know, when our cup is full, that energy will then ripple out to the people in our classrooms or our friends or families. And I think being willing to be honest and authentic and vulnerable enough to say, you know what, I'm feeling really angry today, and this is why. And so I can't show up for you in the way you need me to because XYZ, you know,
right.
Or this hit a nerve with me and I need to be able to sit with that. Can you please give me the space to do so? Right.
Yeah.
Or that sort of self-advocacy, which in my generation, right, growing up, I had to learn those skills as an adult after having spent years and years and years suffering with compassion fatigue. So those were skills that I had to develop on my own. And now I'm like, oh, I want to share these because they're really valuable tools and skills. But we cannot share what we don't yet have for ourselves. It's like the dinner table. It's like the big, expansive, beautiful Christmas dinner table. You cannot invite over family and friends to dine at your table and enjoy the evening with you or the experience of an abundant Christmas dinner if you yourself don't have the resources to provide that Christmas dinner. And totally. So I think our emotions and our journey with others from a resource standpoint is the same. You know, we have our physical resources that we need to cultivate and then share with others. And then we also have our emotional, mental, psychological, energetic, spiritual resources that need to be cultivated and developed before we can then share them with others.
I love that. And I love that. I mean, That is so your lane around this idea of, you know, really that that intentional practice mm-hmm. that becomes so great about this work, which it really is a practice and nobody's good at it. But I will tell you, the ones that really do it on purpose get better at it. And it's such a thing. It's such a thing.
Yeah, it's a muscle. It's no different than going to the gym, getting stronger. You've got to work it to build it. And it has to hurt a little bit, right? Like, it's like, oh man, like that workout was brutal. Like, I could barely sit down. You could really feel it. And yeah. In a lot of ways, emotional resilience is the same. You really have to feel it. And it can be painful and uncomfortable. And we want to avoid it. We want to avoid the workout at the gym. We want to avoid the emotional strain too. But it's a muscle. Mindfulness is a muscle. And so when we build it and strengthen it, it is sometimes uncomfortable and challenging. But in the end, we take that strength with us. That strength yeah. goes with us wherever we go after we've done the work. And the work is never really over. Like you say, there's no end game. There really isn't. Yeah. It's just a journey. We're just constantly learning, constantly.
Yeah.
It never ends. And for some people, I think that feels very defeating and very like, oh my gosh.
Right. Yeah.
It excites
and I think that's a point. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's sort of the point too, that we don't want to sort of get in this place where it's like, okay, this is undoable. Like we cannot obviously make this happen. And that's, you know, I think that's the reminder of, you know, we're never going to arrive, but holy moly, there's growth. And yeah. I would just sort of challenge you to sort of take a look at where you were this time last year. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, that often happens as we hit into this December, January place of like, how much have you learned? If you could talk to your, you know, 25-year-old self, what does she know now? Mm-hmm. And how do you want to use that as a parent, as a leader, as a friend? What does that look like for you? I think that becomes so critically important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I couldn't agree more. That reflection piece is huge. Looking... Yeah. And we so often look back with regret. I had a conversation with another mom just the other day about this, about mom guilt. I said, we often look back with regret. The human brain is somehow wired. Well, I know this through my work that we have negativity bias of a 5-to-1 ratio, right? So mm-hmm. we are literally wired to think negatively. It's part of our survival mechanism. And so when we look back on how we were as a parent a year ago or 5 years ago or when they were infants, we're really hard on ourselves. But the one thing that I did, not knowing it at the time with intention, but now really, really benefiting from it, was I took loads and loads and loads of videos when my kids were little, because I have twins just like you. We had right. three at the age of three and life was crazy. And I took tons and tons of videos, you know, in those moments when Carson is making grape soup at the kitchen, you know, at the kitchen sink, and there's bubbles everywhere and he's squeezing grapes into the sink, making soup, and, you know, or they're in the pantry and they've pulled out all the cereal boxes, or, you know, we're dancing in the kitchen, like all those moments I tried to capture as many as possible. And one day the kids had said, mom, can we watch our old videos? Oh yeah, sure. No problem. So we sit down to watch the old videos. And I realized in that moment, I was like, damn it. I was a great fucking mom. I was an amazing yeah. mom. What? Who the right? Like, what are you?
I know. And here's the thing: as a twin mom, you'll appreciate this too. I didn't take all the videos because I think I was too, like, I don't know, depressed. But my mom did, and I'm very grateful for that. And there's so many times where I watch those now, and I was, what? Yeah, we did.
Totally. You know. Totally, totally. But we immediately go to that negative or that lack mentality, right? Where I didn't do enough. I wasn't kind enough. I was, you know, I wasn't present enough. I yelled too much. And then when you realize it and you take those moments and you go, actually, no, that's not true.
Actually, I was. I know.
That's a lie. That self-saboteur is a lie. And he's not allowed to come in and play anymore. Like you used to say, you know, not today, Corona, right? It's yeah. like, not today, self-saboteur, guilt mom, bullshit. Yeah. Like, no.
Yeah.
It's not. No, that's fine. Don't know. So yeah, it really helps reframe, I think, the truth, the reality of the matter, because we can be so hard on ourselves, especially when things are messy, right? And we're in the midst of crisis. It's really easy to find all the things that went wrong when really, is that the truth, right? Is that really the truth? And that ability to ask that question for of ourselves, like, is that really true? Because more often than not, it's not, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a story. It's just a story that's been bought.
100%. All of those stories are the things that we keep, you know, writing the next chapter around. And I think it's, you know, it's places like this, it's, you know, it's the things that you and I get to do every day that I think not only, I mean, I say this all the time. I love that there's a platform and that we talk to people and that people listen to, you know, the things that you say or I say or whatever the deal is. But I got to tell you this, like, this is my own work in real time. So I often am figuring this shit out as we go, or every conversation I'm lucky enough to have, I'm like, I got to remember that today. So it's like, I think that's the point of it, right? Is that we just, you know, even though you may be the one talking about it or helping a friend through it, or, you know, things come out of your mouth that you're like, fuck, that was good. Most of the time it is in this place because we needed to hear it again and again and again.
Absolutely. That repetition is no different for adults than it is for kids, right? We need our brains, in order to be rewired, we need to hear it. I think research shows it's like an average of 12 times, you know, not once or twice, but that fill your cup model, right? It has to happen over and over and over, because that negativity bias in our brains wants to hijack everything. And it's just 100%. Not fucking true. It's just not true.
It's not fucking true.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I have to thank you for joining me today. I so appreciate our candid conversation. As always, I have a list of questions I want to ask, and then conversation happens and it's, no, we're going to talk about this because this is, I love it because that's the way I work anyways. I often find, even when I was teaching in the classroom, I'd come up with this like great lesson plan, and then I'd get in front of the kids and they would kind of, oh no, we're going to go in this direction. Oh, we're going to, great. And I got to the point where I almost stopped lesson planning. I'm sure my principals, if they heard me say that, they'd be like, what? But I got to a place where I was like, okay, I know the curriculum I need to teach. I know what we need to cover. Let's just see what emerges from it. And I so love these candid conversations for that same reason, because I love to just see what emerges.
And 100%.
So thank you again for your time and your energy today. I so appreciate it. And I will definitely keep you posted on to future calls and events and programs. So, and thank you for all that you're doing for teachers and parents and kids in Alberta and beyond, you know. So it'll be really interesting to see just how things continue to unfold for folks as we all go through this.
Yes. Thank you, Amber. Thank you. It was such an honor to sit with you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So we'll talk soon.
Yeah, I'd love it.